Brothers and sisters, I'm going to ask you all to stand. Well, we know what this day commemorates. So let's start with 2 minutes silence, just remembering Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar.
तर आपण सुरुवात करूया बाबासाहेबांची आठवण करून त्यासाठी आपण 2 मिनिटं शांत उभे राहणार आहोत.
Jai Bhim. Bai Jie. So, brothers and sisters in the Sangha, I'm very pleased indeed to be here today with you on this occasion. Of course, it's a sad day when we remember that in 1956, on this day, Dr. Ambedkar was taken from us. And it's our duty on this day to remember him, to call him to mind. And of course we do so with some sadness. But nonetheless, I'm very pleased indeed that I've got this opportunity to be with you. I particularly enjoy giving talks in Nagpur. I always find that audiences in Nagpur are very, very responsive. It's really easy speaking in Nagpur. But also it's very significant to me to be here because it's connected with this day in 1956 that I first heard of Nagpur. Many years ago, before I'd ever come to India, I heard my teacher Sangharakshita, Bhante Sangharakshita, talking about this day.
बहुत साल पहले जब मैं भारत में भी आने का था, मेरे गुरु भंते संग्रह जी इस दिन के बारे में काफी बोलते थे.
And at that stage, I knew almost nothing about Baba Sahib.
उस समय मुझे बाबा साहब के बारे में कुछ भी पता नहीं था.
I knew nothing about India.
और भारत के बारे में भी मुझे कुछ पता नहीं था.
But he described his experience in Nagpur on that day in
1956.
And this made a very, very deep impression on me. And from then on, I thought I really want to come to Nagpur. And indeed, I'd really like to be here on the 6th of December. So today, my wish is fulfilled. So Bhante described to me how he'd come to Nagpur on the 6th of December, in a way by chance. He hadn't been able to be at the Diksha on the 14th of October. But he thought, well, he must come as soon as he could to see the new Buddhists of Nagpur. So he took the train overnight from Pune and he arrived in Nagpur in the morning. And he was taken straight to the house of a friend where he began to rest. But he'd only been there for about an hour when people came wanting to see him. And what they said was, Baba Sahib has died. Completely unexpected. And of course they were very, very upset indeed. And all over Nagpur, as the word spread that Baba Sahib was dead, people just completely despairing. And people were coming to Bhante and saying, well, please come and speak to these people. Please come and speak to those people. So he said, well, let's try and speak to everybody together. And he invited everybody to Kasturchand Park. And a big condolence program was arranged for that evening. I can see at least one person who was there that night. So this program was got together at the very last minute. They didn't have time to make a stage. There was just a rickshaw. And that was the speaker's platform. There were no lights, there were no microphones. Just some Petromax. And so many people were coming. And Bhante said that they were all wearing the same white clothes that they'd worn for the Diksha 7 weeks before. And they were coming from all directions, pouring into the park. And he said there was something absolutely extraordinary about this gathering of people. They were in complete silence. Now, I've spent enough time in India to know that you never get silence with an Indian audience. Indians really enjoy talking, they really enjoy each other's company. But on that night, there was complete silence. And they gathered around, each person carrying a candle. So he saw this river of light coming towards him. So several people, several leaders of the new Buddhist community were to speak. But in the end, Bhante was the only person who spoke. Because one person after another would get up and try to speak. And when they started to speak, they couldn't get the words out. They were so overcome with sadness. And one after another, they just had to sit down. And he said that in the end, he was the only person who could speak. He was able to master his own feelings and to speak. So hearing all that made a very, very deep impression on me. That so many people should feel so upset that one man had died. I already felt, well, this Dr. Ambedkar must be a very, very great man indeed. But there's something else he said that made the greatest impression on me. He said that as he was speaking, he began to feel there was a presence there. He said that it was as if there was some great presence there above the audience. He said he doesn't know really in a way what that presence was. It seemed to be the presence of Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar. It seemed as if he was there with those 100,000 people. No, in Buddhism we tend not to make theories about things. All we can say is, well, that was the feeling that he had. Was it Baba Sahib's consciousness still there? Or was it the concentration that so many people had upon him that created that presence? Well, I don't know. But I know that that can be a real experience. In much smaller ways, I've experienced it many, many times here in India. I felt the presence of Baba Sahib. His influence is still alive. When we stood in silence, well, there he was. If we focus our minds on him, there he is. So this made a very deep impression on me. Bhante's experience on that particular day. And I very much wanted to come here to share that day with you. I would have really liked to have held this program in Kasturchand Park. I did once go to Kasturchand Park and stand on the back of a rickshaw where Bhante would have stood. And I felt his presence. And I felt the presence of all those 100,000 people and of Baba Sahib. But anyway, we weren't able to go there tonight. But we're here. And we've been to Kasturchand Park in our imaginations. So thank you for coming with me on that journey. On that occasion, Bhante said that what he was trying to say was, well, Baba Sahib's not dead. He's not dead as long as we remember him. As long as we remember him. He's not dead so long as we remember him. He's not dead so long as we carry on his work. He's not dead so long as we put into practice what he's taught us. And, well, I can tell you that's very much my experience here. Unfortunately, I never had the opportunity to see Baba Sahib. I do try as often as I can to meet people who did meet him. That way I can catch his reflection as if in a mirror. But even if I haven't met him, hadn't had the opportunity to meet him, I felt his presence among you. As it happens, I arrived in India for the first time. Yeah. As it happens, I arrived in India for the first time on December the 6th, 1985. And I saw Dhammachari Lokamitra give a talk in Pune. And again, I felt the presence of this man. And as a result of that experience, I've tried to understand more and more the man and his teaching. And that has had a very big effect upon me. In fact, as time has gone on, I felt myself to be a follower of Baba Sahib. I come from such a different culture to you. But Baba Sahib has touched my heart. He's influenced my life. So I feel that I am with you, a disciple of Dr. Baba Sahib Ambedkar. So what I want to do tonight is, with you all, go further in keeping Baba Sahib alive. Tonight and over the next 9 nights, I want to talk with you about what we can do to bring, to keep Baba Sahib alive and keep his message even more alive.
हम आज की रात और आने वाले 9 रातों को ये कोशिश करेंगे कि बाबा साहब को
आप हमारे लिए जीवित रखने के लिए उनके विचारों को और अपूर्णता से जीवित रखने के लिए हम सभी लोग क्या कर सकते हैं?
Of course, the main point is that we keep him alive by remembering him. But not just remembering him as a sort of image. But we remember him by remembering to put what he taught us into practice. We keep him alive by following in his footsteps. So over these next few days, I want to see how we can follow in the footsteps of Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar. Now I think this is very, very important for us. Of course, we don't feel the loss of Babasaheb quite as people did nearly 50 years ago. Not many of us perhaps are feeling that we want to break down in tears. But I always notice that on December the 6th, there's a quite different atmosphere. There is a quite definite sadness in the air. So following in Babasaheb's footsteps is a way we make sense of that sadness. It's a way we make sense of that sadness. In a sense, you could say it's by following in the footsteps of Babasaheb that we make sense of his death. Well, we all know that when death happens to somebody close to us, we feel very upset indeed, we feel very sad. I've had a very strong experience of this myself quite recently. My mother departed this life. So when somebody close to you dies, you feel very, very upset indeed and very distressed indeed. And when somebody like Babasaheb, who gave so much to so many people, dies, you feel especially sad. When you think of that crowd of 100,000 people in floods of tears. So, yes, the 6th of December can be a day with some pain in it, some sorrow in it. But there are different kinds of sorrow. I thought of this quite a bit while I was mourning my own mother. It's as if there are different flavors of sadness. Often when somebody dies, you first of all feel a great sense of despair and loss. You feel, well, what can I do? What's the point of living? You feel, well, life is empty now. And that's what people were saying to Bhante. Now Babasaheb's gone, what can happen to us? Without him, we're like orphans without their parents. So there's a great sense of despair. So that's a sort of bitter kind of sorrow that you can feel. Then there's another kind of bitter sorrow that you can feel. you can feel a sort of sorrow of regret. You can feel, oh, if only I'd done this, if only I'd done that. You know, maybe with my mother, I thought, well, I got irritated with her just a few days before she died. If only I hadn't done that. Maybe sometimes people felt, well, if only we'd taken Baba Sahib more seriously, well, we would have, he wouldn't have died. So the sorrow of despair and the sorrow of regret are bitter sorrows. But there can also be sweet sorrow. Yeah, you do feel sad, but you also feel something else as well. So you can feel it, what I describe as a loving sorrow. So for instance, well, in the case of my own mother, yes, I feel very sad, but I also feel a lot of love for her. A lot of gratitude. And I can imagine that when Baba Sahib died, when the bitter sorrow passed off, that sweet sorrow came. A very strong memory with strong gratitude and love. And then there's another kind of sweet sorrow. Yes, you feel deeply saddened at the loss. But you feel greatly inspired by the life. When that person dies, you become aware of their real qualities. So inspiration arises. When you think of Baba Sahib, yes, you feel sorry that he's gone. But you feel great rejoicing in the life that he did lead. You feel a great delight in the real human and spiritual qualities that he held. And that leads to a strong determination to be true to their teaching and work. In other words, to follow in their footsteps. So let's experience our sorrow, but let's turn it into a sweet sorrow, where we feel not only the loss, but our gratitude and our love. We feel great inspiration at the life of Baba Sahib. And great determination to put what he gave us into practice. So if we feel sorrow, the way to use that sorrow is to follow in Baba Sahib's footsteps. So following in his footsteps is the true way to remember him. Now you notice that I've used the words follow in Baba Sahib's footsteps. I haven't said worship him like a god. And I haven't said use him like an advertising slogan. Now this is very, very important. We could just turn Baba Sahib into a god. We could just pray to him and say, "Oh Baba Sahib, please help me with my exams. Please give me a son. Baba Sahib, please make my life go well. Oh Baba Sahib, that neighbor of mine who's been very unpleasant to me, well, make something unpleasant happen to him." So we could give up our responsibility for ourselves to Baba Sahib. We could stop making an effort ourselves and try to leave it to him to do it. Now you probably know that I was brought up as a Christian. And I remember every night I used to kneel down by my bed and I used to pray to God. I knelt down by my bed. I said, "Oh God, please let me pass my exams." But the strange thing was, God didn't seem to listen very carefully. Sometimes I fail my exams. So of course I'd say to God, "Now come on God, I asked you to let me pass my exams and you didn't." But then one day I realized that the way to pass exams was to study hard. God can't make you pass your exams. Baba Sahib can't make you pass your exams. Only you can. And, well, it's very, very important we don't think of Baba Sahib like that. We mustn't think, well, Baba Sahib will make us good. If we just garland his statue, well, we'll get good luck. But this is a way in which we avoid responsibility for ourselves and our own lives. And if Baba Sahib lived for anything, it's that people took responsibility for their own lives. That was his message. The future lies in our hands. It's we who make our future. Yes, he did enormous work for so many people. But that work is useless if people don't work for themselves. Clearly this was very, very deeply important to Baba Sahib. After he took the three refuges, you know he took the 22 pratigyas. And the first of those pratigyas are to do with giving up worshipping gods. He wasn't doing this because he was against those gods or against the people who worshipped them or anything like that. But he knew that in worshipping those gods, people didn't take responsibility for themselves. They left their lives to the gods. They didn't take moral and spiritual responsibility for themselves. Now this is still significant today. I know that in the Buddhist community in India, people drift back to those old gods. Sometimes people do it because, well, they don't want other people to see them as different. Sometimes they do it because they think those gods can really help them. But if one is doing that, one is not following in Baba Sahib's footsteps. Baba Sahib took his own life into his own hands. He lived life taking responsibility for his own actions. So let's follow Baba Sahib, not by worshipping him as a god, but doing what he teaches. And I do think this is quite a serious issue today. So maybe something that we can think about. Of course, if other people want to worship gods, well, that's up to them. We're not saying anything about them. We're saying something about ourselves. Buddhists should be friends to everyone. So we don't need to attack people. There are too many people attacking other people in this world today. But we want to be followers of Baba Sahib. And that means taking responsibility for ourselves. Making an effort for ourselves. And that means not worshipping gods. And it means not making Baba Sahib into a god. He was very much against this himself. And he knew that that tendency was there. So he spoke strongly against it. Yes, let's honor and reverence him. Let's express our gratitude to him. Let's garland his photograph or statue. But not see him as somebody who can change our lives. He's a shower of the way, not a giver of liberation. Now there's another thing that people do instead of following in his footsteps. They use him like an advertising slogan. You know that advertising technique. You've got a new car. You're a manufacturer and you've got a new car. And you want people to buy that car. So what do you do? You get a big Bollywood star. And you get that big Bollywood star to stand next to the car. No, like Dubashi, translation. So then people think, ah, that star, she likes the car, it must be a good car. But of course that star doesn't know anything about cars. all she's done is sit in the back of the car while somebody else drove it. You're not going to take advice on cars from a star. But this is what happens. We try to take something that people admire and associate it with our own product. But it's actually just fooling people. They like the star, so they buy the car. So people know that there's great admiration for Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar. So they try to get endorsement of their own views by associating them with Babasaheb. Every party in India honours Babasaheb. They've all got his statue, his photo. But how many of them even know what he thought? How many of them agree with what he thought? But they use the enormous respect that people have for him in order to sell their views. This even happens within the Buddhist community. People justify, for instance, hatred in the name of Babasaheb. People say, well, Babasaheb, he taught fighting hatred. Well, of course he did teach that we should stand up for ourselves. But he taught that Dhamma to be Sadhamma must have Karuna and Maitri. So they cannot be used to justify hatred. So people use Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar, to support their own views and attitudes. And the complete opposite of what he really taught and thought. So let's keep Babasaheb alive by following in his footsteps. Let's keep him alive by following in his footsteps. Let's not worship him like a god. Let's not use him like a star in an advertising campaign. Well, what do we do if we're going to follow in Babasaheb's footsteps? How do you follow in his footsteps? How? Where are you following those footsteps to? If you want to follow in somebody's footsteps, it's very good to know where it is that they're going. And what route it is that they're following to get there. Well, Babasaheb made it quite clear where he was going. On the 14th of October 1956, he took Diksha, going for refuge to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. So, where was he going? He's going to the Buddha. He's following the Dhamma to the Buddha. Babasaheb's going to Buddhahood. That's the direction he's going in. That's what we're doing when we go for refuge. We're saying, I want to be a Buddha. Not just I want to be a Buddha, I'm going to be a Buddha. It's no good saying I want to be without that commitment to actually doing it. For instance, I met a young friend just last night who told me he wanted to be a pilot in the Air Force. And well, being a pilot in the Air Force is not easy. And he was working very, very hard at his exams and learning to fly so that one day he could be a pilot. You don't become a pilot just by saying, I want to be a pilot. You need to commit yourself to doing the things that bring it about. So Baba Sahib said, I'm going to be a Buddha. And he committed himself to the work that would take him in that direction. Of course, the great tragedy, one of the great tragedies of the 20th century, is that within 7 weeks, he was dead. We don't really know how he was going to live his life after that. So it's not so easy for us to say how after that he was going to pursue Buddhahood. But we do know a lot about the path he was following before that. We've got his writings. Especially we've got the Buddha and his Dhamma. And that gives us a very strong clue as to what he thought the Buddhist life consisted in. And we've also got the example of his life over many, many years. And we know that he saw the path not just as concerned with oneself. And he saw that the Buddhist path was for others as well. In fact, he wore himself out working for other people. I think there's little doubt that he sacrificed his life for the sake of his people. He could have been so wealthy. He could have been so powerful. But he devoted his life to the uplift of the downtrodden masses. He worked tirelessly for the sake of others. And it's certainly my impression that he died prematurely because of that enormous load on his shoulders. Of course, he worked very hard on himself as well. What Baba Sahib's life exemplifies is a life of self-development. Even quite late in his life, for instance, he learned to play the violin. Teaching himself Pali. Working on his own attitudes and approaches to people. For him, spiritual life and practice and social reform were one and the same thing. There's hardly anybody in the modern era who exemplifies this better than him.
सदी में आधुनिक जगत में ऐसा
He saw that social reform rests on a change in the mind. Just a few days before he died, he said these important words. The greatest thing the Buddha has shown the world is that the world can only be reformed by the reform of the mind of man. He knew that social justice, the creation of the kingdom of righteousness, was the greatest aim. But the kingdom of righteousness only comes about if every individual practices morality. That involves great personal effort. Social reform, a just society, requires moral and spiritual effort. Moral and spiritual effort. So this was his very, very important insight. You can't have a truly just society unless it's made up of just people. Just people are not born, they're made. We have to turn ourselves into just people. So Baba Sahib saw that very clearly. But he also saw that a just society was one in which people had the opportunity to develop themselves. So for Dr. Babasaheb Ambedkar, personal spiritual fulfillment and the creation of a just society were one and the same thing. You can't have a just society without personal spiritual development. You can't have a just society without personal spiritual development. Personal spiritual developments, you must have a just society if you have to have personal spiritual development. So, all of that tells us that what the path was that Baba Sahib was following. He was following the Bodhisattva path. He was a modern Bodhisattva. A modern Bodhisattva of a quite outstanding kind. He was perhaps the outstanding Bodhisattva of the modern era. And that's why I am proud to call myself his follower. I'm personally trying to follow the Bodhisattva path in his footsteps. Now, this Bodhisattva path is to be the subject of this whole series. And I want to say a little bit now about the term Bodhisattva. The term Bodhisattva is found in all phases of Buddhism. We know that there are many, many different schools and traditions in Buddhism. And the term Bodhisattva is found in them all.
और बोधिसत्व ईसा के द्वारा इन सभी संप्रदाय के पत्रों में देखने को मिलता है.
In the earliest tradition, it simply means a Buddha to be.
एकदम शुरुआत की परंपराओं में बोधिसत्व इस शब्द का अर्थ बोधिसत्व बुद्ध बनने वाला इतना ही था.
It means somebody who's going to be a Buddha.
इसका मतलब केवल इतना ही था कि जो बुद्ध बनने जा रहा है.
So in the Jataka stories of the Pali Canon, we have many, many different stories about the Buddha Shakyamuni in his previous lives as a Bodhisattva.
So Jataka kahaniyon mein bahut sari kahaniyan aapko sunne ko milti hai jo Buddha Shakyamuni Buddha hone ke pehle ke jeevan ki wo kahaniyan hai.
But it came to have a distinctive meaning in later Buddhism.
Lekin uske baad ke Bodh Dharma ke
It meant increasingly one who lived the spiritual life for the sake of others as well as for himself. A bodhisattva doesn't say, well, I'm going to gain enlightenment, I don't mind about everybody else. A bodhisattva says, well, I can only gain enlightenment unless everybody else comes with me. We've all got to move towards enlightenment together. Well, wasn't that Baba Sahib's path? Isn't Bodhisattva the right term for Baba Sahib? What else could we call him? In an outstanding way in this modern world, he showed that the spiritual life is lived for the sake of others. Now there's a small problem here. This use of the term Bodhisattva is found in those schools of Buddhism known as Mahayana. The Mahayana originated here in India. And then it spread, especially in the north of Asia and in the east. And it's particularly important now in Tibet, China, Japan, Korea, and so on. And indeed, it's quite widespread now amongst Buddhists in the West. This idea that the Buddhist life is lived not just for yourself, but for others too, has very great appeal in the modern West. And that's why I personally would like to see many more people in the West knowing about Baba Sahib.
और इसलिए मैं व्यक्तिगत रूप में मुझे ऐसा लगता है कि पश्चिमी देशों में ज्यादा से ज्यादा लोगों को बाबा साहब के बारे में पता हो.
So the term Bodhisattva is especially given this meaning in the Mahayana.
और ये जो बोधिसत्व का यह अर्थ खास करके महायान में किया जाता है.
But some people say Baba Sahib wasn't a Mahayana.
लेकिन कुछ लोग बोलते हैं कि बाबा साहब महायान नहीं थे, बाबा साहब को महायान पसंद नहीं.
He was a follower of the Theravada, for instance.
कुछ लोग कहते हैं कि बाबा साहब थेरवाद के अनुयायी.
But this is clearly not true. Baba Sahib didn't think in that way. He was just a Buddhist. He drew on the whole Buddhist tradition. He was willing to take inspiration and guidance from many parts of the Buddhist tradition. We can see this in the Buddha and his Dhamma. Of course, in the Buddha and his Dhamma, he draws mainly from Pali, therefore Theravada sources. But there are several very important Mahayana references throughout the Buddha and his Dhamma.
पूरे बुद्ध अवतार धर्मनीति के ग्रंथ में महायान के लिए हुए बहुत सारे संदर्भ हैं.
Especially there are references concerning the Bodhisattva.
और खास करके ऐसे संदर्भ हैं जो बोधिसत्व के बारे में बताते हैं.
And it's these that I'll be referring to in these talks.
और इन प्रवचनों में मैं इन संदर्भों के बारे में बात करने वाला हूं.
There's one that I especially like, which concerns the practice of the perfections.
और मुझे बाबा साहब की इन संदर्भों से बहुत ही पसंद का ऐसा संदर्भ है कि जिसमें पारमिता का आचरण करने के बारे में कहा है.
Those of you who know the Buddha and his Dhamma will know why I like it.
अगर बुद्ध और उसका धर्म जिन्होंने पढ़ा होगा उनको शायद पता होगा कि मुझे ये बात क्यों पसंद है.
Because Baba Sahib quotes a discussion between the Buddha and Subhuti.
अब क्योंकि आपको पता होगा कि बुद्ध और उनका धर्म के ग्रंथ में बाबा साहब ने उदाहरण दिया है वो चर्चा बुद्ध और सुबुति इस दोनों के बीच.
So I'm very pleased my name appears in the Buddha and his Dhamma.
इसलिए मेरे को बहुत खुशी होती है कि मेरा नाम उनके बाबा साहब और उनके धर्म में आया.
Of course, it's not me.
अब वो मैं नहीं हूँ.
It's just the person I've been called after.
वो ऐसे व्यक्ति है जिनका नाम मुझे दिया गया.
But I'm particularly fond of that quotation.
लेकिन वो जो संदर्भ है वो मुझे बहुत पसंद आता.
And in fact, Bhante gave me that name because he knew how strongly I responded to that scripture.
और भंते जी ने मुझे ये नाम इसलिए दिया है क्योंकि उन्हें पता था कि उस ग्रंथ के प्रति मेरा कितना आकर्षण था.
So there are many different quotations from the Mahayana Sutras.
तो महायान सूत्रों से बहुत सारे ऐसे संदर्भ वहाँ पर दिए हुए.
So from that we know that Baba Sahib was very open to the whole Buddhist tradition.
और इससे हम ये जानते हैं कि बाबा साहब को संपूर्ण बौद्ध परंपरा पसंद.
We know that the Bodhisattva path was very important to him.
और हम ये भी देखते हैं कि बोधिसत्व का मार्ग भी उन्हें बहुत महत्वपूर्ण लगता था.
He was a man of extraordinary breadth of vision and knowledge.
बाबा साहब ऐसे व्यक्ति थे जिनका ज्ञान बहुत ही विशाल था और गहरा.
And he drew inspiration from many sources.
और उन्होंने बहुत सारे अलग अलग स्रोतों से प्रेरणा ली.
His was not a narrow mind.
बाबा साहब संस्कृति दृष्टि के व्यक्ति नहीं है.
And he saw the spiritual path as encompassing all beings.
और उन्होंने देखा कि आध्यात्मिक जीवन ये सभी लोगों के लिए है.
If you don't believe me, look in the Buddha and his Dhamma.
अगर आपका मेरे पर विश्वास नहीं है तो भगवान बुद्ध और उनका धर्म इस ग्रंथ को पढ़िए.
The evidence is there, plain to see.
और वहां पर आप इसका सबूत देख सकते.
Now, while I'm on this, I want to just deal with one question that arises. I know that there's a question being asked. Some people say, shouldn't we confine ourselves as followers of Baba Sahib to the Buddha and his Dhamma?
So, कुछ लोग कहते हैं कि हम अपने आप को ऐसा क्यों नहीं कर सकते कि अपने आप को हम कहें कि हम बाबा साहब ने बताए हुए बुद्ध के धर्म के अनुयायी हैं उसके अलावा और कुछ नहीं.
We shouldn't quote from other scriptures or other sources.
वो लोग कहते हैं कि बाकी जो कुछ भी बौद्ध धर्म ग्रंथ है उसमें से कुछ भी हमें लेना नहीं चाहिए.
Well, of course, if you don't want to look at other sources, that's all right.
बात ऐसी है कि अगर आप दूसरे किसी ग्रंथ की तरफ नहीं देखना चाहते हैं तो कोई बात नहीं.
In a way, you could say the whole Dharma is there in the Buddha and his Dhamma. But you don't have to confine yourself to it. The Buddha Dhamma is an extremely broad spiritual current. And Baba Sahib is a very broad man, very learned man.
और बाबा साहब बहुत ही विशाल व्यक्ति मतलब थे बहुत ही ज्ञानी व्यक्ति.
He wouldn't have confined himself, he wouldn't have narrowed himself.
और बाबा साहब ने अपने आप को ऐसा संकुचित नहीं किया होगा अपने आप को बंद नहीं किया.
He knew that the Buddhist scriptures were so vast.
उन्हें पता था कि बौद्ध धर्म ग्रंथ बहुत ही विशाल.
He knew that people needed a handy compilation.
और उन्हें पता था कि लोगों को हम हमेशा देख सकते हैं ऐसा एक छोटा सा ग्रंथ चाहिए.
But we've no reason to believe that he thought that was all the Dhamma.
लेकिन ऐसा विश्वास करने में कोई अर्थ नहीं है कि उतना ही चाहिए ऐसा उनको लगता था.
Indian Buddhists, followers of Baba Sahib, are part of the great Mahasangha.
भारतीय बौद्ध जो है बाबा साहब के अनुयायी जो है बहुत ही बड़े वैश्विक बौद्ध महासंघ के घटक.
They're part of the worldwide Buddhist Sangha. Let's not cut ourselves off from that Sangha by our narrow exclusiveness. So let's open ourselves up to the Bodhisattva spirit, wherever that may come from. Let's follow Baba Sahib by remaining open to the whole tradition. Of course, while reverencing and expressing gratitude for what he distinctively gave us. So let me conclude. Over the next 9 days, we're going to be trying to see how to follow in Baba Sahib's footsteps. We're going to be seeing how to follow the Bodhisattva path. And it's a path that involves both personal practice and spiritual realization on the one hand. And it involves building the kingdom of righteousness on the other. And we're going to learn in detail how to follow that path. And I hope that this will be very useful to you all. If at the end of it you all felt that you understood how to follow in Baba Sahib's footsteps more clearly, I would be a happy man. The goal I've set myself is that all of us make some spiritual progress over these days. That we all take some steps in Baba Sahib's footsteps along the Bodhisattva path. Now, in order to do that, each day I'm going to give you a bit of homework. I'm going to ask you to do some work when you leave. There are too many of you for me to check on you. That's up to you. I can't take it all in and look at it. But if you want to, I suggest you do try to do some homework. It's so easy to go and hear a talk and think, oh, that was very inspiring. And then you just forget it. For instance, I remember last time in Pune, I gave a talk on Maitri.
Maitri,
yeah. And I could see the audience was really, really inspired. And the next day somebody came to me and said he felt very, very ashamed. He said he'd gone home full of Maitri. And when he got inside, he could smell something. His wife had burnt the rice. His wife had burnt the rice. So he shouted at her. So then he thought, oh no, my Maitri didn't last even into my house. So we, please, let's try to keep something alive, at least for a day. We don't want just to listen to those words, laugh at the jokes, be inspired by the inspiration, and then forget it. We mustn't just go through the motions of being Buddhists. Just appear to be Buddhists. We can do so many good Buddhist things, but without actually changing ourselves. I heard once that in some Japanese Zen monasteries, they do a lot of meditation. And a friend of mine told me that he went to one of these monasteries. And every day he'd sit there with these monks, deep in meditation. Their eyes were closed. Their backs were straight. They didn't move for hours on end. Then one day, he learned something. He thought they were sitting there deep in meditation. But they just learned to sleep with their backs upright. So we do good things. We seem to be practicing the Buddha Dhamma. But inside we're asleep. We come to a talk, we laugh at the jokes. We are moved by the inspiration. But nothing changes. This is, of course, the third fetter. And this we have to break through. So I'm going to try to help us all to break through this fetter. So, tonight I want you to do some reflection. I've been talking about following Baba Sahib's footsteps. I've been talking about following the Bodhisattva path. So I want you to ask yourselves a question. Of course you don't have to, it's up to you. Liberty, a very important principle, means you don't have to think about this. But I invite you to ask yourself a question. Ask yourself, do I want to follow in Baba Sahib's footsteps? Do I really want to follow in his footsteps? So please ask yourself that question. Ask yourself, do I want to follow the Bodhisattva path? It would be good to get this clear right from the start. It's no good following over the next days if that's not what you want to do. Otherwise it'd be a bit like sitting in a mathematics class when you decided you didn't want to do it. You could sit there but not be paying any attention at all. So I hope that I've given you enough food for thought. Of course you'll all say yes. But then just stop and say, do I really want to? Am I really prepared to change myself in this way? So I shall remind you tomorrow night. I shan't ask you out loud, but I shall just remind you that this was the question for our homework. If you do want to follow in Baba Sahib's footsteps, then tomorrow we will start to try to see how we can do that. We'll together set out on the Bodhisattva path. We'll start our journey as a Bodhisattva. And in that way, we will honor Baba Sahib.
और इस ढंग से हम बाबा साहब का सम्मान करेंगे.
We will keep alive the work he gave his life to.
और हम उस कार्य को जीवित रखेंगे जिन्होंने जिस उन्होंने जिस कार्य के लिए अपना सारा जीवन दिया.
We will keep him alive.
और हम बाबा साहब को जीवित रखेंगे.
And we will feel his presence with us.
और हम उनका अस्तित्व हमारे बीच है उसको महसूस करेंगे.
Jai Bhim.